Well, since I don't hear any car doors slamming or footsteps in the hall, yep. There's someone. Some of you have heard me speak of the wonderful BBC storyteller, Stanley Unwin. If you haven't heard of him, you can find his work on YouTube and so on. You can go to the BBC website and find some of his work. Really, he's quite a remarkable human being. And he would he had a children's show for many, many years where he would tell stories to children. And he would open the show by saying, "Are you all sitting comfortable, too square on your bodies? Very well, then we'll begin." So that's how we'll begin this morning. I have some very nice news for us. Please mark your calendar for a weekend retreat in mid-July. Swami Chandrasekhar Anandaji, what a mouthful, huh? Swami Chandrasekhar Anandaji of Portland, or the head of the Portland, Oregon Center, will visit us on a Saturday and Sunday in mid-July to offer his wisdom on karma yoga. Exact dates and schedule are to be determined. They will be announced soon online and in your e-news. He's going to send me an email about his schedule. I think he's planning to visit a couple of other centers while he's out here, using our invitation as a way to see some other places and visit some other centers and swamis. Please also note that your center will be closed in August. No activities except arati. This will now be our routine for each summer. Are there any announcements I should have made that I did not make? Very well, then. We'll start with our opening chant, which establishes our relationship with the divine being and our purpose here. This, as I've said, for those of you who don't know, this is the translation provided to us by the Swami who founded this center, Swami Yogeshananda. It's an ancient Upanishadic chant. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. No one came forward to offer a song this week, and I have none either. So we'll just go right ahead into our talk for today. Once again, welcome. Thanks for coming. We do so much appreciate your coming out on these Sunday mornings. May is a month for the study of Jnana Yoga, sometimes called Advaita Vedanta. As a Jnana Yogi, you practice discrimination, reason, detachment, and Satyagraha. I use that Sanskrit term. We know the others. Discrimination, of course, is viveka, detachment, vairagya. But I use satyagraha because it is such a potent term. The insistence on truth, that is portrayed by the word satyagraha, satya, truth, graha, insistence, truth insistence. It is such a powerful tool to train the mind. And of course, it was the watchword for Gandhiji's movement, and then it became again a term used by Reverend James Lawson and others who trained the young people who acted out the civil rights movement here in the United States. So as a jnana yogi, you practice discrimination, reason, detachment, and satyagraha, insistence on truth. The goal is freedom from limitation, mukti. Our teachers say that all miseries in life are caused by seeing inaccurately. An earnest and persistent jnani may break through this misapprehension. An earnest and persistent jnani may break through this misapprehension called maya and see only the divine presence everywhere in everything and everyone. When we learn to see accurately, what will we see? Swami Vivekananda said, "Come up, O lions, and shake off the delusion that you are sheep. You are souls immortal, spirits free, blessed and eternal. Ye are not matter. Ye are not bodies. Matter is your servant, not you the servant of matter. Each of you is only a conduit for the infinite ocean of knowledge and power that lies behind mankind." Is this not inspiring? Is this not a call to move forward from our present position of feeling bound and uneasy, full of desires and so on? "Ye are souls immortal, spirits free and blessed. Ye are not matter, ye are not bodies. Matter is your servant and not you the servant of matter. Each of you is only a conduit for the infinite ocean of knowledge and power that lies behind mankind." And so today we're going to look at the question, what is the jnana in jnana yoga? What is the jnana in jnana yoga? The word jnana means knowledge, spiritual wisdom, born of realization, that is beyond our ability to think or speak about it. And this is so key. The limitation, the moha, that is necessary to manifest the human form, yields a mind that is limited in its ability to express the great reality. Though, as the Swami says, it is only a conduit for the infinite ocean of knowledge and power that lies behind, nevertheless, that infinitude, that reality that is the truth of our being, is inexpressible because no finite expression of thought or speech can hold it. Yoga means both union and detachment. Therefore, the illumined jnana yogi, the one that has come to this realization that's beyond our ability to think or speak about it, the illumined jnana yogi is one with the deepest truth of her or his being and detached from the limitations of maya, our apparent relative reality made of time, space, and causation. Swami Vivekananda, after 1893, gave a number of lectures here in the West, many of them on jnana yoga and how to practice it. In this morning's talk, we will explore and discuss just a small portion of what Swamiji said, and how his teachings can be integrated into our daily lives. And the key to this integration is this great sense, this great feeling of inspiration that comes from contemplating the greatness of our true being, the wonder of our true being. It is this that inspires us. As the Jnana Yogi, as the great Advaitin Nisargadatta Maharaj said, the world is so real for us because we think about it so much. If we stop thinking about it so much, if we deliberately dedicate our mental activity, our actions to discrimination, reason, detachment, and most importantly, insistence on truth, we will in time replace the lower truth of our present condition with the higher truth. Let's hear more from Swamiji. Jnana, knowledge, is creedlessness. But that does not mean it despises creeds. It means that a stage above and beyond creeds has been gained. The jnani, the true philosopher, strives to destroy nothing, but to help all. All rivers roll their waters into the sea. All rivers roll their creeds. He's speaking of creeds, of course. All rivers roll their waters into the sea and become one. So all creeds should lead to jnana and become one. Jnana teaches that the world should be renounced, but not on that account abandoned. To live in the world and not to be of it is the true test of renunciation. And isn't that a gorgeous thought? To be in the world, but not of it, is the true test of renunciation. As Christ said in his shortest logion in the Gospel of Thomas, be passers-by. Be passers-by. And Swami Prabhavananda said, if we could but think of ourselves as the Atman and look at the things of the world objectively, everything would pass by and be all right. So it is this replacement of our thought of ourselves as we sit here this morning with this higher truth of our divine presence, of our divine being. So we're going to see what Swamiji says about how to get from here to there. I cannot see how it can be otherwise than that all knowledge is stored up in us from the beginning. If you and I are little waves in the ocean, then that ocean is the background. A wave is never separated from the ocean. It appears on the surface of the ocean. But all that is the ocean is potential in that wave. And about these little waves, the Swami said, all souls are playing, some consciously, some unconsciously. All souls are playing, some consciously, some unconsciously, as the waves play on the surface of the ocean. Religion is learning to play consciously, bringing this play into the forefront of our thoughts and therefore of our actions. The real existence is without manifestation. My goodness, hold on just a moment. a printer malfunction. The same law which holds gods in our... The same law which holds good in our worldly life also holds good in our religious life and in the life of the cosmos. It is one. It is universal. It is not that religion is guided by one law and the world by another. The flesh and the devil are but degrees of difference from God himself. So if we think of this as a spectrum, at one end is this realm that we're sharing this morning of limitation. At the other end of this spectrum, no difference, as Swami Brahmananda said to Swami Prabhavananda, show me the line of demarcation, show me the line of demarcation, where the world of matter ends and the world of spirit begins. There is no line of demarcation. It's a spectrum. And so we move from lower truth, as Swami Vivekananda said, we move from lesser truth to higher truth. This is a lesser truth we're experiencing here this morning. It's not an untruth, but it is some degrees apart from the reality of our being and of God himself. The real existence, the great ocean on which the waves are playing, and this is what's so hard to get our minds around. The real existence is without manifestation. We cannot conceive it because we should have to conceive through the mind, which is itself a manifestation. Its glory is that it is inconceivable. We must remember that life in the lowest and highest vibrations of light we do not see, but they are the polar opposites. They are the opposite poles of existence. Life in the lowest and highest vibrations of light we do not see, but they are the opposite poles of existence. There are certain things which we do not know now, but which we can know. It is due to our ignorance that we do not know them. There are certain things which we can never know because they are much higher than the highest vibrations of knowledge. But we are the eternal all the time, although we cannot know it. Knowledge will be impossible there. Why is knowledge impossible there? Because there is no knower. Knower and known are within the realm of duality, that we're sharing this morning. In this highest realm of realization, the personality, the reflected being, the reflected mind disappears. There is only awareness, only pure consciousness. So it can't be said that we know it because there is no knower, but we experience it in a way that is inexpressible. Knowledge will be impossible there. The very fact of the limitations of the conception is the basis for its existence. Now, this takes a long time to get from the words to some grasp of this. I'll repeat it. The very fact of the limitations of the conception is the basis for its existence. If we study the cosmology, for example, of Sankhya, we see that the unmanifest goes through several stages. before appearing as the manifestation that we see. First, there is the pure unmanifest. Then there is the pure manifest, Prakriti. And then there are these stages of cause and then effects. The effects are being able to tell one thing from another, the buddhi, the discriminative faculty, then the appearance of the mind, first as the ahamkara, the I maker. So all of this is a, so to speak, limitation of first the pure unmanifest and then the pure manifest. Limitation, limitation, limitation until we sit here in these limited but glorious forms this morning. But, Swamiji says, there is nothing so certain in me as myself. And yet, I can only conceive of it as a body and mind, as happy or unhappy, as a man or a woman. At the same time, I try to conceive of it as it really is, and find that there is no other way of doing it but by dragging it down. Yet I am sure of that reality. By dragging it down, he means that sequence that I just described. There's no way for us to know that pure unmanifest, or for that matter, the pure manifest, except in samadhi, when the knower has, so to speak, gone to sleep. This would actually seem to be Sri Ramakrishna, when he went into samadhi, would appear to be sleepy. First he would be sleepy, and then there would be no evidence of life at all. Yoga Nidra, it's called, the sleep of yoga. So, we are not apart from this in any way, and yet we do not know it. And so Yajnavalkya, Swamiji now quotes Yajnavalkya from the Great Forest Upanishad, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. He quotes Yajnavalkya saying, "No one, O beloved, loves the husband for the husband's sake, but because the self is there." Now, what are we doing? We're defining jnana. We're defining the knowledge that is the jnana of jnana yoga. This is so similar, what Yajnavalkya says. Each one of us sitting here is beloved. Why? "No one, O beloved, loves the husband for the husband's sake, but because the self is there. It is in and through the self that she loves the husband. No one, O beloved, loves the wife for the wife's sake, but in and through the self." And then the Swamiji then begins on his own. "And that reality is the only thing we know, because in and through it we know everything else, and yet we cannot conceive of it," the self that Yajnavalkya is pointing to. "How can we know the knower? How can we know the knower? If we knew it, it would not be the knower, but the known. It would be objectified. Wherever there is life, with it there is death. Life is the shadow of death, and death the shadow of life. The line of demarcation is too fine to determine, too difficult to grasp, and most difficult to hold on to." Which is what Swami Brahmananda was pointing out when he said that to Swami Prabhavananda. Matter, is inert. Matter is dead. It is only the self that animates. It is only this ineffable, unknowable self that makes this matter that we sit here inhabiting seem to be alive. That's what the Swami means. Where there is life, with it there is death. Life is an evident thing, but it carries with it the shadow of death. Life is the shadow of death, and death the shadow of life. The line of demarcation is too fine to determine, too difficult to grasp, and most difficult to hold on to. And then the Swami switches metaphors. He's trying to help us grasp this. So he switches metaphors and he says, each soul is a circle. The center is where the body is, and the activity is manifested there. You are omnipresent, though you have the consciousness of being concentrated in only one point. But each of us, the Swami says, is omnipresent. You are omnipresent, though you have the consciousness, the awareness of being concentrated in only one point. That point has taken up, I just love the way the Swami says this. That point has taken up particles of matter and formed them into a machine to express itself. And if we remember in chapter 5 of the Gita, that's exactly what Krishna says. The Atman, for its own purposes, has expressed this body. That point of pure consciousness, has taken up particles of matter and formed them into a machine to express itself. That through which it expresses itself is called the body. You are everywhere. When one body or machine fails you, your center moves on and takes up other particles of matter, finer or grosser, and works through them. And this is the human being. So then, what is God? God is a circle with circumference nowhere and center everywhere. This, you see how clumsy language is. This is one of the most eloquent human beings that ever spoke. And he's trying to use this circle metaphor to express infinitude. So what is God? God is a circle with circumference nowhere and center everywhere. Every point in that circle is living, conscious, active, and equally working. With our limited souls, only one point is conscious, and that point moves forward and backward. The soul is a circle whose circumference is nowhere, limitless, but whose center is in some body. Death is but a change of center. I remind you, what we're doing is we're defining the jnana of jnana that allows us to free ourselves. We're defining what the knowledge is that allows us to free ourselves, even though we do not fully understand, cannot fully understand the freedom that we're moving to. The soul is a circle whose circumference is nowhere, limitless, but whose center is in some body. Death is but a change of center. In other words, nothing to fear. Nothing to concern ourselves about. Death is but a change of center. God is a circle whose circumference is nowhere and whose center is everywhere. And then this statement of inspiration for us. When we can get out of the limited center of body, we shall realize God, our true self. The world is so real for us because we think about it so much. When we begin to think otherwise, when we begin to practice satyagraha, taking all of these thoughts and the many more that allow us to emphasize the truth, then we shall realize God, our true self. When we can get out of the limited center of the body, we shall realize God, our true self. And then Swamiji goes into this very ecstatic mood. Seek the highest, always the highest, for the highest is eternal bliss. If I am to hunt, I will hunt the lion. If I am to rob, I will rob the treasury of the king. Seek the highest. Oh, one cannot be confined or described. One that can be perceived, in our hearts of hearts, cannot be confined or described. One beyond all compare, beyond limit, unchangeable like the blue sky. Oh, learn the all, holy one, I seek for nothing else. Where changes of nature cannot reach, thought beyond all thought, unchangeable, immovable, whom all books declare, all sages worship. O Holy One, seek for nothing else. Beyond compare, infinite oneness, no comparison is possible. Water above, water below, water on the right, water on the left, no wave on that water, no ripple, all silence, all eternal bliss. Such will come to thy heart. Seek for nothing else. And then we see we're told at the pinnacle, jnana and bhakti come perfectly together, because this is the Swami's final statement in this series. Thou, our Father, our Mother, our dear friend, thou bearest the burden of the world. Help us to bear the burden of our lives. Thou art our friend, our lover, our husband. Thou art our self. Thou art our Father, our Mother, our dear friend. Thou bearest the burden of the world. Help us to bear the burden of our lives. Thou art our friend, our lover, our husband. Thou art ourselves. Om Hari Om Tat Sat. So this has been an attempt through the words and thoughts of Swami Vivekananda to define what is the jnana that we speak of when we speak of jnana yoga. What is it given rise to in you? What are the thoughts that come to you? What are the questions or comments that you'd like to make? You know, this is the best part of the hour, where we speak with one another about what So, yes.
It's a change from everywhere to a change of some place of aggression or regression, or what is it?
I'm sorry, Robert. Would you say that again? I'm not sure I understood you.
It's a change from a position of everywhere. Be an example of the change from everywhere, the change to some place of aggression or regression, or what is it?
I would say, rather than aggression, I think you've hit on something important. There is something happening here. It is assertion, not aggression. And I don't think regression, though it is limitation, but it is assertion. In the Chandogya Upanishad, this great, great attempt to fully define what Brahman is, which of course is not possible, but it's the best one can do. Whoever it was that spoke the Chandogya said, the cosmic mind, that great pure manifest, said, I am one, I shall become many. Now that is an assertion that changes the nature of that pure manifest to something less than pure manifest. So in that sense, it can be thought of as a degradation, what Swami Vivekananda said, dragging it down. But I don't think it's an aggression, just simply assertion. That's a good question. Do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. It was that many. It's not one-pointed.
There's one point. There's one point. There's another point. It seems to be many-pointed. We are the divine being having human experiences, not the other way around. We're not human beings. Being human being, we have to remember, being is a verb. We are the divine being human. So there are not many points, though there seem to be. And it's undeniable. We cannot say, each one of us, do I not exist? Yes, I exist. But as Ramana Maharshi kept insisting, find out what you mean by I. What is the I that is asserting that? And there we return to that assertion. It's confounding, Robert. There is no two ways about it. It is baffling, confounding. And this is why Swamiji tried in these various metaphors and various ways to give us some grasp of what's meant by the jnana that is of the knowledge that is of jnana yoga. Thank you, Robert.
Robert, were you trying to say that the point everywhere being confined to one point in the human body is a progression or a regression? I think that's what you meant to ask, right?
No, that was the original question.
Okay.
And that grew out of his answer.
So, anyone else?
One observation.
you are speaking about this world and what we are seeking, our roots. That world is a very artificial division.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me of what Gandhiji said. He said, I am an Advaitist. I see no difference between the mundane and the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
And he practically observed that in his life. There was no division in his mind, in his actions, between the public and the private domains.
Mm-hmm. There's not even any division in his mind between the oppressor and the oppressed.
Right.
This is the Satyagraha.
His words, I see life as an organic whole.
Yes.
Which includes all this apparent division.
Notice the gesture you're making, yes. A circle.
Sorry.
You're making a circle, an organic whole. This is... We return again and again to this metaphor of the circle or the sphere.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we saw.
Yes.
That's why he said I'm into politics, not for the sake of politics, but politics being a part of that entire circle.
Yes. If it's an organic whole, then politics is not outside that circle. No. Nothing is outside the circle, which is why the Swamiji said its circumference is nowhere.
Yeah.
Anyone else? This is good. Yes, dear.
That line, part of Swami Brahmananda, that there is a line of demarcation between matter and spirit, right? Did I understand that?
Swami Brahmananda said, show me the line of demarcation where the world of matter ends and the world of spirit begins. Mm-hmm. There is no line of demarcation.
I understand it philosophically, but if you would give me a little bit more tangible examples, for example, I could say that a rock is inert matter. The body is inert matter. And the spirit is in the body, but there's so many things in the world that are inert. So there's a demarcation between a live thing and an inanimate thing. So.
If you go now and you speak to a physicist will tell you that what is creating all of those lines of demarcation, all of those compartments, is sitting right there, and here in each of us. There is nothing but vibration. Nothing outside of this skin. Nothing but vibration. Vibration at various amplitudes, various levels of vibration, various high and low, long waves, short waves, down to inconceivably tiny millisecond bursts of vibration, which is what quantum physicists study. So it's all vibration. And if you equate vibration with this ocean of consciousness and the fields within those vibrations that are spoken of as quantum fields, They're where things begin to manifest. And there's something called the Higgs boson. The Higgs is a vibration at a certain frequency. That frequency, when encountering other frequencies, gives them mass. So it's called the God particle, because without mass, there is no gravity. Without gravity, there is no universe. So it's all alive in the sense of it's all vibrating, whether it be a rock, whether it be your liver. Your liver vibrates at a certain frequency. They can measure it by measuring things in your blood that tell you whether your liver is vibrating at an appropriate frequency or an inappropriate frequency. It's fantastic. So, and each one of us sitting here is this incredible machine that is created by consciousness for its own purposes. We used the word earlier in talking with Robert, assertion. I exist. I assert that. It seems that this is created in order to assert that. Amazing. Awe-inspiring. But are we content with that, those limited thoughts? Or do we wish to go beyond? And this is strictly a choice. It's not a demand. It's not an imperative. We can choose the bhakti path and soldier on in that path and achieve realization. The jnana path is very demanding. It requires constant insistence on the truth. Never yielding. This is what's meant by neti neti. We toss that term around, neti neti. Neti neti is not an idle thought. It's not just something to toss off the tongue. It means no to this, no to that. In this moment, and the next moment, and the next moment, I will yield to no limitation. What power of mind that takes!
Not just power, purity.
Yes, power and purity. But are there saints who embody it? Oh yes, Vivekananda was one. Ramana Maharshi another. Nisargadatta Maharaj another. There are many. Their names ring down through the ages. Vashishta. I mean, there's a book in here called The Nectar of Supreme Knowledge by Swami Sarvadevananda. You read that book, you reel. You simply reel back from seeing how I live this moment to moment to moment to moment versus what Vashishta says is the truth. Yes, Dr. Mudge.
Nice. I didn't raise my hand.
Oh, okay. Yes, Robert.
I see it more as a spiral rather than a circle.
Yes.
Because if you see it as a spiral, then there is no outside. Mm-hmm. The outside of one revolution is just another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So it's endless and all-inclusive.
Yes. In the mystical traditions, yes, this spiral shows up again and again. It shows up in the Kabbalah. It shows up in the mystical tradition of the Andean Aymara people. It even looks, their version of it, which is very ancient, looks like the helix, the triple helix of DNA. Yes, dear.
I wanted to ask another continuation to my query. When Jesus said that every blade of grass will be enlightened, is that what he meant?
Yes. And Swami Vivekananda expands on that in his Christ the Messenger and in his Jnana Yoga talk on evolution, that involute in the smallest particle is a Jesus Christ, is the highest expression within reality, within our limited reality. So, yes, every blade of grass will be enlightened. As a matter of fact, he would even assert in other contexts that it already was enlightened, that he was in that blade of grass, in that stone, in that block of wood. It's in the Gospel of Thomas. So that enlightenment was inherent in it. This is precious. Someone else. Yes?
You were going to talk about the bookshops.
Yes. I'll get to that. Yes?
Could you repeat the quote, please, that you... you repeated it twice. I forget what... It was very... Not confounding, but I didn't quite understand. There was one in particular...
Which quote? About what?
I know I'm not being specific, but... was that which is limited allows one to... Or will assert there. Something along those lines. If not, I'll look at the report. Yeah.
Say it again, please. I'm still not clear what you want me to repeat. I'm very sorry. I would repeat it in a moment.
It's okay. I'll look at the recording later. I don't remember what it was. Yeah. It was confounding.
I think about expressing it, that the limitation would express itself.
Like the limitation, it had a purpose to the limitation.
Yeah, towards the beginning.
Yeah, you paused and smiled and then...
Let me see. Well, we start with come up, O lions. I'm pretty sure that's not what you mean. Each one of you is a conduit.
Blank page. Soul is a circle, the body is in the center.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you to take a look at the notes, and they'll be posted online.
Can I look at your notes later?
Of course, yes. You're welcome to take this if you like. And I'm sorry I can't immediately twig to what it is you're saying.
If I may ask, that quotation is a little... bit of ambiguous to me when you said that everybody loves everybody else, or the husband and the wife, and the wife and the towards the husband, that love is for the self. That you wish to interpret it in the philosophical level, that the self is in the other, or the other is in one's own consciousness, and therefore that other person has been perceived. Or that the God is your love that is being expressed in your love for your husband or your family member. So I was not quite clear about the love you...
Yajnavalkya says...
You love your husband for the self, and the husband loves the wife for the self. I was not very clear. Is it from the mundane point of view, it is each one loves everybody else from a selfish point of view?
No. Capital S self. It is for the sake of the self within you that others are drawn to you. Nothing selfish. Let me finish. This is very important. You are an expressed being. You sit down at the harmonium and you sing and you play the harmonium beautifully. This is self-expression. Krishna Kali, as a personality, is this and that and the other thing. To many different people, you're many different things. But you're always the self. The self is what animates you. So we are able to appreciate your self-expression. And so many people are attracted to you because of that self-expression. That's self-evident. But the self is not to be known as the personality is to be known. It is simply that the self in this is drawn to the self in that. Why? Because they are not two. They are only one. one, only one. And we recognize that in the seeming other. Ramana Maharshi was approached by a student one time. He'd come with a group of people. They were all close friends. And the student said to Ramana Maharshi, "Well, Master, if I achieve the state of awareness, the state of consciousness that you have," he gestured to his friends and said, "What about the others?" Ramana Maharshi paused just a moment and said, "There are no others. There's only the self." That's what he meant. He didn't say those words. I'm adding to it. There's only the self. It appears to be everything we see. This is what Swamiji was trying, with metaphor after metaphor, way of approaching it after way of approaching it, to try to crystallize for us. That is the reality which remains for us to realize. We'll never know it with our mind. We can appreciate the metaphors and the explanations of Swami Vivekananda, of Yajnavalkya, of the Chandogya Upanishad, of Jesus Christ, of the Kabbalah, for that matter, of the Aymara of the Andes. Magnificent philosophy, religious philosophy there. So the but this is the jnana of jnana yoga. This is the attempt to reorient our minds from the lower vibrations of light to the higher vibrations of light and insist on that being the truth until our mind finally yields by saying whatever its version of neti neti is, not the lower vibration, not the lower vibration, not the lower vibration, insisting on the higher vibration, satyagraha, until finally one can speak as Uma quoted Gandhiji as speaking. I see only that. Yes.
You mentioned about Swami Prabhavananda.
Yes.
Swami Prabhavananda said, if you think of yourself as Atman and look at the world objectively, then you will realize what you truly are.
Then everything will pass by and be all right. And it's a wonderful pun, because using that word objectively, if we see everything else as object and think of ourselves as the subject, that that is pointed to as in thou art that, or aham brahmasmi. Atman is what? Atman is saguna Brahman. Brahman manifest within a human being. You can point to it as in the Upanishads, is that little blue being the size of a thumb that is seated in the lotus of the heart. This is a metaphor for Atman. But Saguna Brahman and Nirguna Brahman, no difference. It's only one is unmanifest, unknowable to anything that is human. And Saguna Brahman, that which is knowable. Yes, Dr. Mudge. I've been waiting.
This is a very mysterious and almost an insoluble situation, because the moment you use the words, it limits the concept. Yeah. And without words, how can you express the concept? So therefore, even to say it is a circle with no circumference, you are still calling it a circle, which is a geometrical shape. And if there is no limiting outline, it cannot be a circle from geometrical.
Yes.
But one thing is true, that the centers might be everywhere, but it does not have any diameter. Because the moment you say diameter, it connects two portions of a circle,
yes,
and this circle is non-existing, and therefore there cannot be a diameter.
Yeah, this is the difficulty with metaphors.
This is the problem. But what I'm thinking, that instead of a circle, we say it is a continuity. Yes. There's no circle, it's a continuity. So continuity could be from the stone to what we call lower forms of life, to what we call ourselves higher forms of life.
Mm-hmm.
But as higher forms of life, right now, this body is dependent upon trillions of bacteria within the body,
yes,
which are working for me.
Yes.
Otherwise, I will not be existing.
Yes.
So perhaps the workable solution is to see our interconnectedness.
Yes.
And this interconnection is not only between you and me, but this interconnection is everything that you can see and cannot see.
There are no others.
Yeah. Same way, you know, Einstein, for example, he says that to an entirely ignorant person, if he goes to a symphony, you know, where if he's a physicist, he says, there's nothing more than vibrations here.
Mm-hmm.
But a musician who has an ear for that one is a beautiful symphony.
Yeah.
It connected me to God.
Yeah.
So there are several points already around us that can connect us to our higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of visualizing the higher self, just to understand and incorporate into our understanding what the higher self is. For example, you know, we always say the heart has a conduction system, and there is one node which is called sinoauricular node. It gives you vibrations, and therefore the next node picks up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to the bundle of his. The last one is called bundle of his. That his is real capital H his. Because that him. Because H-I-S. But his was the name of a scientist.
Mm.
And that way it is called a bundle of his.
Mm.
But to me, it's not a scientist. It is a, because something is connecting us. Something should be beating this node, giving vibrations, so that it sends the vibrations. We are all sending our vibrations.
Yes.
As our spiritual leader, by the thoughts, you are sending us the vibrations.
Yes.
You are saying this concept cannot be defined because it has no limit.
Mm-hmm. And yet, there it sits, limited,
exactly,
as you and you and you,
yes,
and you. That limitation is not separate from the unlimited. To be fully, this Swami Ranganathananda's book, Divine Grace, makes the point absolutely unassailably. To be fully human is to be fully divine.
That's correct.
And so it's a spectrum. As Tota Puri, Sri Ramakrishna's teacher of Advaita Vedanta, said, it took me 40 years to achieve this. And here Sri Ramakrishna did it in 3 days. So it just depends on, you know, how quickly you can adjust your vibrations. You know, Sri Ramakrishna was able to adjust his vibrations very quickly.
Because it was a fertile soil here, all the sadhana.
He was perceiving those so quickly that something which I did not understand as a child, which now I understand, that somebody was beating a beast and Ramakrishna said, stop it.
Yes.
I feel the hurt of that one. He said,
yes.
How could you? And then his back was open and he could see the source.
Yes, you could see the lashes,
yes,
on his back.
Yes.
Yes.
The now, same this thing. Is not
a magic. No, this is the same thing happened. There was a boatman,
yes,
in the Ganges. One boatman was beating another, and Sri Ramakrishna, the lash marks appeared on Sri Ramakrishna's back because of the total oneness, total unity. I mean, these, as you say, it's not magic. It's just it's a reality that is beyond our ordinary way of thinking.
So perhaps the vibrations are not just the waves, it is synonymous with sensitivity.
Oh, yes.
And I think spirituality makes us sensitive.
Oh, yes. It does indeed. Sri Ramakrishna was so sensitive toward at the end that any little thing, he could feel it from great distances. He perceived a cobra about to threaten this. This group of boys was sitting around a tree, sitting by a tree in the garden at the Kashipur garden house, and Sri Ramakrishna sensed a cobra was about to attack them. It was one of those black cobras that attacks. And so he, in his subtle form, though he could no longer rise from his bed, in his subtle form, he got up and rushed downstairs, out into the garden, confronted the cobra and told it to go away, and then came back. And of course, Holy Mother could see his subtle form, and so he said to her as he was coming back up the stairs, he said, "Oh, you have seen." So this sensitivity, yes, it's beyond our ability to really think about it. Yes, dear.
I was going to say that it is the self capital in me that's attracted to the self, the capital self in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the persona or the personality or the mask that's constantly changing.
Yes.
Depending on where one is at the moment. Mm-hmm. Liking 1 minute, not liking the other minute.
So and you're a mother 1 moment and a wife the next and a doctor the next.
Right.
Persona, 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 persona. But the self does not change.
So the purpose of spiritual practice is to slowly drop that mask.
Or to simply be very, very aware of them and what they are and why they are. Not so much drop them. This is why the Swami said, not be apart from the world, but simply renounce that as a way of being, as a way of being that you believe in, that you believe this is me. Yes, in the back.
You can only get a limited result from a limited proposition.
Yes.
And when we get confused, at least we seem to expect more. And we're not capable of presenting more.
Yes. Yes. Well, you said the perfect words when you said you only get a limited result from a limited proposition. This is why Swami Vivekananda says, unlimit your proposition. Unlimit the proposition that you are that this limited self, and go to that beyond. Yes, in the back.
I'm still trying to understand the Jnana Marga, how far it can help to proceed in a spiritual path for a normal human being. The reason being, we studied Ashtabodha and few other things which are related to Jnana Marga and Advaita Vedanta.
Mm-hmm.
And read or know about Vivekananda and Ramana Maharshi. Once you get the clarity of Brahman, Atman and Maya, Ishwar, in a way it helps you to conceptualize things in a better way, and when you meditate or even if you worship, you can put things in right place and proceed in a better pace. And Ramana Maharshi was having some devotion with him, and maybe Vivekananda was having some jhana with him. Having said that, only with jhana, for a person like me or normal human being, only with jhana, how far he or she can realize things that one should try to realize, and if it is not accompanied with any jhana or bhakti.
If it's a matter of your own priority, dear, it's your own priorities. How much are you willing to give your life to this. If you study the life of Nisargadatta Maharaj, you'll find that at some point he made the decision, all right, I'm going to stop doing what I have been doing. So he gave his series of bidi shops, his shops, to his family, and devoted 3 solid years. And he marveled that it only took 3 years. But of course, he was ignoring, in a sense, all the years before. Progress had been made. So how far we go on the Jnana Marg is measured by our earnestness. Nisargadatta Maharaj said, everything yields to earnestness. So for 3 years, he earnestly followed his guru's instructions and achieved realization. This is his assertion.
So, to understand, like, Jnana Marg is more, if I understand, self-inquiry. And as you mentioned, like, maybe ask questions to yourself and try to get clarity on things around that. So,
my suggestion is, rather than try to conceptualize it for yourself, that you seek a realized soul who has achieved this on the Jnana path and take instruction from that person. I cannot be that person. So, I have told you what Swami Vivekananda said, because Swami Vivekananda clearly and demonstrably was a realized soul. I've given some interpretation of these things to give them context, but that's as far as it's going to go with me. I suggest if you want instruction in how to achieve realization on the Jnana Marg, you find a realized soul on the Jnana Marg and take instruction from them, and then to the extent you are capable and willing, you dedicate yourself to following those instructions. And everyone who's ever achieved has said, this is not impossible for anyone. If you do it, you will achieve the result. This is what they say. Does that do it? Good. Anyone else? This is beautiful. This is exactly what this is meant to be.
The word anyone will be replaced by everyone. There is nothing like anyone, because anyone is a part of everyone. And
yes.
Therefore, basically the Bhakti Marga and Jnana Marga and everything, they are the just differentiation. They are also waves. They are the waves.
Yes.
But the ultimate is the ocean.
Yes. Well, Swami Vivekananda said very clearly, Bhakti, the Bhakti Marg, is the easiest path. It's the slower path, but it's the easier path. It can be mastered more easily by most people. The Jnana path, as Sri Ramakrishna points out, if you read from page 126 in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, you'll see what Sri Ramakrishna has to say. Without being in the tiniest bit dismissive, he says that the Jnana Marg is extremely difficult and demanding. And so he suggests for this age, for most people, the bhakti path is the way to go. And it's the same message. It's virtually the same message in this part of it, of Sri Ramakrishna's message. It's virtually the same message as Sri Chaitanya's, which is why we chant Sri Chaitanya's prayer here every morning. It is a path that is available to us. Now, Sada Sadanan, this man sitting right here, he is our bookstore manager. We have experienced something in the last number of weeks, maybe 6 weeks, that is unprecedented. Someone, and we know who it is stealing from the book box there. The total has been about $120. This person is schizophrenic. They live at a distance and visit here from time to time and have the delusion that we are receiving money here through the mail that is meant for them and keeping it. They're delusional. And so they're, in their deluded estimation, what they're doing is they're reclaiming what is theirs by taking money from the cash box. So I don't want you to answer the question today, but you as our congregation, you are the members of this place. You are the people who support this place. And my question is, shall we simply endure this? Or shall we go to a situation where we purchase books only by cash? I mean, but only by check. No longer accept cash, and only accept checks, or you would be able to pay on PayPal. We would establish an app that would you could put on your phone or access through your computer and pay for books through PayPal. So please just consider this. And get back to me about it. And I'll talk then with Sadanan about this, and we'll go forward, we'll make a decision. So the fork, so to speak, is shall we simply endure this rather minor level of theft? Or shall we go to a situation where we no longer accept cash, so it won't be available to steal, and accept only checks or payment through PayPal? The PayPal is easy to do, by the way. It's not difficult at all to pay. You would just have to remember to do it after you left here if you did it through your computer, or just do it on your phone if you're one of those people who's expert enough and can see well enough. I can't see well enough to do that kind of thing on my phone. But so please do communicate with me. Maybe I'll ask next Sunday, or if you want to just email me about it, what your thoughts are. It's a small amount of money, but it has been increasing. She started with 25 and then 40 and then 55. So, which was essentially all the cash that was in the cash box the last time that it was there. So,
I hope there will not be any books missing.
The books don't seem to be of any concern. It's just the money. You know, because this person is schizophrenic, of course, she's not able to hold a job. And she drives here from Tennessee. And is no longer, of course, welcome to stay in our retreat center because she's so disruptive. And so she's taking money. It's sad, but it's as I say, it doesn't feel to me unendurable. But I want your wise counsel about this. I want your thoughts. All right.
We will be aiding and abetting an untruth if we are passive about it.
If we are what about it?
If we are passive about...
I intend to confront her.
Yes, if we let wrong happen, that's the other philosophical question.
Well,
when you see wrong happen, should you protest?
I intend to confront her about it. I'll confront her about it the next time I see her. But I don't intend to report her to the police. This is too small a petty theft to involve someone in the police.
But
Brother Shankar, this brings to a diametrically opposite of what we have discussed so far. That, yes, in this vast universe, still you have got your obligations. You still have your responsibilities. You have to take care of it, which perhaps was misexpressed by Muhammad the Peygamber. He told his tribesmen, have trust in Allah, but tie your camel.
Tie your camel to a post, yes. Trust Allah, but tie your camel to a post. Yes, indeed. Yes, well, this is why I'm saying, shall we change our way of doing business to where we don't have cash available to steal?
Also, there's nobody here resident to actually monitor anything anymore, so it is imperative that we change our method of payment.
That's one opinion.
The other thing maybe we can do, because there may not be much of a sales the rest of the days, so we could close the, like, you know, the store, only open it on the Sundays.
Yeah. Well, that would be a major change, because the chapel is only open. But this woman, because she's been coming in times past, she was taking her meds. And she was more stable. And so she knows the code to get in the chapel. She knows the I found her here the other day, sitting chanting in the chapel. When I saw her here, I took the cash box. But she had already visited the cash box before I took it. So you can't lock the cash box.
Can you move the cash box to the monastery?
Well, let's not get into a prolonged discussion. This is why I said I'd like to hear from you, but not today, because this could be a long, drawn out discussion, and I would like you just to meditate on it, to think about it, and then give some recommendation. And I don't want to predispose you toward any outcome. So. All right, if there's nothing more, then we'll close with our chant. Again, a translation by Swami Yogeshananda of this ancient prayer for peace. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace on the sky, on the earth, and the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees. May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. So, thank you again for coming. I think we'll find that there are some snacks and tea and coffee, as usual, in the monastery. So, let's adjourn to that locale.